Community Development in Arlington gets a helping hand this month from its own neighborhood campus. Just ahead, we'll take your calls as JU President Tim Koss joins the show. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. And as you get back to work, keep listening to First Coast Connect this Monday. We're always live on the radio. And now catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, JU President Tim Koss and the school's other top leadership on JU's Charter Day of Service and much more. We want your calls at 549-2937. Then later, how this month's Katie Ride for Life in Nassau County is helping connect organ donors to patients and saving lives. Plus, Culpepper on the Armada's record-breaking weekend. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, spring is busting out all over on the Jacksonville University campus this month. There is lots of exciting news to share. Have you heard that JU is in the running to host a 2016 presidential debate? At the same time, campus leadership is also focused on a new community development program for Arlington. JU's Charter Day of Service will send hundreds of JU faculty, students, and alumni out across the community to perform a day of service projects in Arlington. Here to talk about all of this, we welcome JU President Tim Koss. Good morning. And Brigadier General retired Michael Fleming, JU's Chief Government, Military, and Community Relations Officer. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we especially want to hear from people in Arlington today, but whatever your questions are about JU's Charter Day of Service, get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect and email and tweet the show. Tim Koss, let's begin with you. You've been working in your surrounding neighborhood of Arlington for some time, a commitment to this community. And so the Charter Day of Service is coming up. What's it all about?
Sure. Thanks. And thanks for having us on today, Melissa. When you're going to dig in a place like Arlington, which we love, and we've been trying to make it very clear, Jacksonville University is of Arlington. We're committed. You have to get beyond the words. You have to show them in action what you're doing. The Charter Day of Service really combines two great ideas that the general can talk about. One is that we were founded as a university April 16th, 1934. That was our charter day. So every year on April 16th, it's our tradition to gather and celebrate that. This year, under General Fleming, we've added a day of service. So we're gathering together what's going to be more than 700 students, faculty, and others and staff at the university. We're going to go out into the community, into Arlington, to 16 separate sites, to all sorts of different kinds of organizations that could use our help. We're going to volunteer for hours, and then we're going to come back together in the afternoon and evening and celebrate our chartering. And a lot of this came from early discussions back in the day with Fran Kinney, who came to the school in 1958. And I was trying to find a way when I came here in 2013 to really honor the history of the university and its role in Arlington.
So, General, lots of projects. Can you give us some specifics? What all is going to be happening on the 16th?
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. This is going to be great both for our students, obviously for the community also. We have a variety of different types of projects. We have all the way from military. We're going to work with a five-star veteran home. We've got multiple parks and schools that we're going to, and all the way from the Pace School for girls right across the street from us. We're actually going to help prepare them for their prom. They're going to put together the van and just help overall with it. And these are all projects that we went out. We have a partnership with Hands-On Jacksonville to work with the projects. And really, this is part of our overall commitment. While Charter Day specifically is the one we're reaching out, we have ongoing commitments, and we're enhancing the number of projects we have ongoing in Arlington.
And we want to hear from you, Arlington. What are your questions and thoughts about your neighborhood as JU gets ready for its Charter Day of Service? 549-2937 is the number to join the show. You know, General, Arlington is no different than so many other inner-ring communities, inner-ring suburbs across America, with changing demographics, changing times, as people have spread out to farther and farther suburbs. Arlington has undergone a lot of changes, not all of them positive. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the factors you're looking at in this community and how you hope to make the most impact?
Absolutely. While Charter Day is one specific day we're reaching out to the community, we're also part of the Renew Arlington. We're in working very closely with the mayor's office, with Councilman Yarborough, who is from Arlington, also the city council president, and also many of the stakeholders within Arlington. I was fortunate enough to be born and raised here in Jacksonville, so I saw Arlington It's a great community, and we can do more. And we are one of the economic drivers in Arlington, the top one. And one with that, we want to make sure that we're using our influence to reach across the spectrum within Arlington.
Right. JU wants its surrounding community to be vibrant and doing well and thriving.
Right, exactly. And what we saw when we came back together and began in 13, and obviously we're pushing hard on it now, is there's a grassroots effort. People want Arlington to be great. We have our incentives completely aligned with this. We love bringing in students, not only the best students from Jacksonville and all of the state of Florida, but I mean, we are the private university that, at least in this region, attracts hundreds and hundreds of students every single year from all around the world. I mean, over our time, we've graduated students from 50 states and 92 countries. So to bring them into Northeast Florida and have them see everything that we do and fall in love, that's a big part of what we want to do.
And people must be having a holiday hangover because nobody's called yet. Come on, First Coast, we want your calls, especially if you're from Arlington. Get on the line now at 549-2937. The JU faculty, students, alumni can volunteer. Can anybody be part of this?
Yes, anybody can be part of it. We're trying to concentrate, though, first on the JU, Jacksonville University team. And what's been interesting is we've now taken Charter Day, and one of the things we've done previously in the past, we had a global toast where we had a toast throughout the globe, and we'd have people through social media connect to us. We're also encouraging our alumni throughout the world to do a day of service during this week of Charter Day because we feel like it's important not just within the community, but also as our alumni throughout the world, we want them to do the same type of projects that we're doing here locally in Arlington.
And at the same time, JU President Tim Cost, tell us a little bit about some other exciting news you shared recently. JU is one of 16 schools around the country in the running to host either a presidential or a vice presidential debate in 2016. How did that come about?
Right. Well, we're excited about that, but it says a great deal about Jacksonville, Florida, because this is an extremely competitive situation. They come in, they want to know everything about what are the airports like? What's the security like? What's the hotels like? You can imagine this is a massive traveling undertaking. There'll be four debates in the fall of 2016, three presidential and one vice presidential. We were aware of this process by the Committee on Presidential Debates. We plugged into it. We competed to get to this point. There are more steps along the way, but we're pleased. We're the only university in the state of Florida right now still in the running. And we believe we have a good shot, but we're so grateful for the number of people who've pulled together and given us support because there's an awful lot of letters that need to be written, much of which is already done.
Oh yeah, a lot of back channeling, I'm sure. And of course, Florida being the only Florida school in the running, that's an asset. What do you think some of JU's other advantages are in this process?
Sure, they've already been in to visit and they're somewhat secretive, as you might imagine. You know, the Secret Service is going to come, but we can't tell anybody when. what they really look for is there a portion of the campus that they can control reasonably? In other words, do you have a set of buildings that are in a quadrant where they can cordon them off and control them? They're going to take over part of our campus if they choose us. And they like the fact that as you come in off of the corner of University and Merrill, the way our campus is set up feeds very well into that. So without getting into too much detail, they need things for media, for staff, for the candidates, for all of the planners around that. And they don't want a vastly sprawling campus. And if you remember, we're 240 acres on the St. John's River and you can walk everywhere.
When will you know?
We're going to have the Secret Service in soon. And then we'll know something before September 1st.
And right now we're speaking with JU's top leadership as they share a lot of exciting news from the campus in Arlington this morning on First Coast Connect. What are your questions? And especially if you're from Arlington, what are your concerns about your neighborhood? What do you want to know about JU's Charter Day of Service? 549-2937. Kelly in Arlington. Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. Thing is I'm born and raised in Jacksonville, and I've been living in Arlington now for the past 4 years, and I love it. There's great nature parks, and there's lots of nature things to do, but my problem is that there's not a lot of social things. There's not that many restaurants or shops or places that I can go. If I want to go somewhere, I have to drive 20 minutes away from Arlington. My question is, what kind of impact could JU have on the area to bring more of a social environment to it?
Thanks for that, Kelly. Good question.
What I'd like to do, this one of the things within the Renew Arlington that we're looking at is working with the city and the city council to develop, do a community redevelopment area. And that's where we're looking all across the board to create new opportunities for businesses, for social media, social type of things, and also for our students, because our students really want to do things within the community of Arlington. So I think long term, the biggest part of it that we're looking at is a community reinvestment area. Additionally, we're working with the city to redesign both University Boulevard and Merrill Road to make it more walkable, to make it more biker friendly, because we feel like if we do that, businesses will grow up out of that with the community reinvestment area.
Yeah, and that's something people across the community, Tim, are clamoring for, more walkable, bikeable communities.
Sure, and it's a very good question. If you take a look at what we're trying to do, even inside of our own campus, I mean, we've done a lot to keep it walkable. We've also done a lot of what exactly this caller's talking about. We've created more social spaces. You know, you're into the lifestyle of 4,000 students. And what you want to do is, do they have places on campus where they can study, where it's safe, where they can walk, where they can ride? We've built a river house, which we've talked about before, where they can go down on the waterfront. They've got their own restaurants on campus. And we're trying to show, and we bring a lot of community leaders in, whether it's Clay Yarbrough or Alvin Brown, and they see what we're doing there, and they say, we can radiate this out from a core.
549-2937 calls from across the listening area. Anthony is in Ortega this morning. Hi, Anthony. Happy Monday to you.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm a alumni, class of 82, Delta Chi, frat, and I'm just wondering what kind of service projects would the Brigadier General like for the alumni around the world to conduct during this week? I'm all for it.
All right, Anthony, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you for being an alum. That's a great question. Really, the type of things we're doing here in the community, both all the way from beautification of parks to working with veterans' homes to schools, I'd say any one of those, and then depending on the particular area where you live, you can look and reach out. I think any type of service project would be absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, there is always a project in need of a pair of hands, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. 549-2937. Tom is in Mandarin. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to hear the people on the program this morning. If anyone hasn't gone out to the JU campus, it's much different than it was several years ago. I graduated in 2002 and 2004 with my master's. My question for the president is, I think the big 800-pound gorilla that no one talks about is the area a block away from campus where there's a police substation, and the students are basically told not to go there. And how will, you know, beautification projects or things like that change that? The campus kind of reminds me of Yale, that if you go a block in the wrong way, that, you know, you're in a bad area.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Excuse me. Thank you. Excellent question, Tom, and love to have you back on campus when you can stop by. I completely agree with that assessment. In fact, Yale and New Haven and Wake Forest and Winston-Salem are the kind of examples we use. You can also look at the University of Pennsylvania in downtown Philadelphia. You have to go beyond, taking care of streets and lighting and planting things. You've got to get into the real hardcore business of cleaning up an area in terms of kind of what goes on there. So I'll tell you, the way this all started way back in the day was not, when I first got here, not to see if the mayor and I and the Office of Economic Development, the Sheriff's Office and others could get together and talk about a prettier Arlington. We know will result in a prettier Arlington. We talked about a better Arlington. How do we renew? How do we revitalize? That's hard work. And I'll tell you, we've had the sheriff on our campus many times. We've hosted those meetings. We actually gave him an entire floor. We paid for it so that he could have some of his officers on campus, not so much to police our campus, but to create a different environment there in Arlington. We're not there yet. I'll be very honest with you. We've got a lot of work to do. And that's why this idea of Renew Arlington has a lot to do with, quote, beautification, but it has a lot to do with the culture and the way that Arlington's going to take care of itself. And we're involved with a lot of elected officials on this one. It's an excellent question, and you're exactly right.
General.
And I was just going to add that the community itself recognizes the challenges that they have. This is not something that's being forced on them. We reached out. President Koss' first initiatives he had when I joined was actually to reach out to the individual stakeholders there. We've talked with Old Arlington Impact Church. We want to work to them not only from the government side, but also the grassroots initiatives. We are completely involved in that also.
549-2937. Lots of calls from Arlington this morning for JU President Tim Kost and Brigadier General Michael Fleming. Let's go to Kristen in Arlington this morning. Hey, Kristen, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I grew up in Arlington. I grew up in Clifton, and I'm so excited about what's happening in Arlington. I think it's overdue. And I think that one of the amazing things that's moving into Arlington that a lot of people aren't aware of is GRASS, Choice Academy, which is moving into Justina Road, and it's going to have a partnership with JU. It's for students with dyslexia and dysgraphia and dyscalculia. It's an amazing, amazing, groundbreaking initiative that the school board has expanded this year, and I think it's going to do a lot for Arlington. It's bringing in a whole opportunity for learning for both the students there and the students at JU who are going to be working with the teachers and students at GRASS.
Thanks, Kristen. And by the way, Rachel Vitti, the driving force behind the GRASP Choice Academy, she's also the wife of Superintendent Nikolai Vitti. She just tweeted the show, "We're so excited to have GRASP Choice Academy in Arlington with a partnership involving JU."
Yeah, and this is a great question. This is a classic example of what can be done. And Rachel deserves a tremendous amount of credit, as does Dr. Vitti. Terrific friends and partners to the university. This was one of those cases where we were having multiple conversations in real time about what can be done to upgrade Arlington. How can we show investment? And if you're a university like us, you look at what is it we're supposed to do well. In our case, in terms of educating people in the health sciences, especially speech pathology, that led to a very robust discussion between me and Rachel and Nikolai and General Fleming, and we kept working on this, saying, how can we help out here? And the GRASP Academy is a huge idea. I give great credit to Dr. Vitti and Rachel, and we're glad to work with them on it.
It's been remarkable the degree to which you, Tim, and the entire leadership team at JU has, I mean, let's be honest, often universities can be very inward-looking. The so-called ivory tower, you've done the opposite. You've really reached out and built strategic partnerships across this community, and that's by design, right?
Absolutely. This is something that President Cost, when he came back 2 years ago, he talked about specifically connecting JU to the community of Jacksonville as a whole, but Arlington specifically. And by doing that, we're not only making a better connection with the university, we're also making Arlington better, and we have multiple types of stakeholders, and we're only at the start point of it.
And here's a tweet from Jay. "I'm a former Arlington resident, and the Arlington Expressway cuts the community in half, making it a drive-through. How can we change this to get folks to stop?"
Yeah, great question on the roads. You know, there are terms people use in that business called road diet. And I mean, if we're trying to make sure that the road that goes in front of Jacksonville University, especially University Boulevard, is not University Expressway, where people are going 70 miles an hour. And this goes back to Tom's earlier question when he called in. You can do a lot of things relative to safety that end up making it look nice. You can put in turnarounds and water features. You can skinny roads down. You can bury utilities. We're looking at all of those things. And the combination between what we're doing, what JTA and JEA are willing to do, and the corporations that feed them, we're getting there. But it's Arlington Expressway, obviously, is a challenge to us. The University and Merrill Corridor is also a challenge we're working on.
And what does road diet mean exactly? I've never heard that before.
Really? Generally, you want to go into that?
What is a road diet?
A road diet quite often means actually taking out a lane and making that have a broader, the individual roads are a little bit wider, but it also allows for the accessibility of both walking and also bikes. Because one of the things we think in Arlington we can really do a lot more is the accessibility from a biking standpoint, particularly our students. Obviously, young, healthy, want to get out into the community. And right now, there's very, very limited amount of times they can use their bikes going off campus. We hope years to come that that's something that they would just do naturally.
And last but not least, if you're just tuning in, JU's Charter Day of Service is coming up in, just a week or so. How can people get involved?
Right. So that's April 16th. It's our 81st anniversary, coming to the end of our 80th year. It's the week before our commencement, where our commencement speaker will be Governor Mitt Romney, which we're excited about. You can go on our website at www.ju.edu, or you can reach out directly to General Fleming or me, and we're glad to have people involved.
Get involved, and thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
JU President Tim Cost joining us, along with Brigadier General Michael Fleming, JU's Chief Government, Military, and Community Relations Officer, here in studio this morning. And much more still ahead. Later, Culpepper has the exciting news as Jacksonville's pro soccer team breaks not one, but two records this weekend in the sports complex. But up next, a look inside the organ donation movement and the First Coast Own. Katie Ride for Life. That's next.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Pirates have been romanticized in popular culture for more than a century. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll discuss the myth and reality of pirates in Florida with Zach Zacharias. We'll look at the Florida Pavilion at the 1933-34 World's Fair and talk about Andre Smith's Eatonville paintings. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Looking for fresh music? Join us weeknights at 7 for After Hours. You'll hear everything from jazz to electronica, only on 89.9 FM After Hours.
On the next Diane Rehm show, Iran and world powers agree to a framework nuclear agreement after 18 months of negotiating. What's in the agreement, reaction here and abroad, and prospects for a final deal. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, here in this country, every 10 minutes, another name is added to the National Organ Transplant Waiting List. More than 120,000 men, women, and kids right now need life-saving organ transplants in this country. And did you know just one organ donor can save 8 lives? It's so easy to decide to become an organ donor. That's why we're talking about this right now, because April is National Donate Life Month. And here to tell us about the importance of organ donation awareness and a major event here on the First Coast, we welcome David Caples, founder of the Katie Ride for Life and the Katie Caples Foundation. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. And Dr. Andrew Keaveney, he's medical director for the liver transplant program at Mayo Clinic. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And there are a lot of misconceptions about organ donation and a lot of questions. If you've thought about this and have questions, we want you to give us a call, 549-2937, to join the show. And in just a moment, we'll talk about Katie Ride for Life. But first, David, let's talk about your daughter, your late daughter, Katie Caples. Tell us about Katie.
Melissa, Katie passed away in 1998. She was coming back from a March of Dimes walk in Jacksonville, headed back to home, and near what is we all know as River City now, she came up to an intersection there, and there was a great deal of traffic. She went to pull out and apparently did not see a truck coming in the other direction, was hit in the driver's side, and she luckily, in all of this, was attended to almost immediately by a group of firemen who were on the scene, and they were able to take certain steps to prolong her life, and therefore she was, in the long run, able to provide 5 different organs to other individuals so that they might live on.
Had she decided to become an organ donor before the accident?
She did. And in fact, when she was getting her license, my wife and I happened to be with her that day, and the question was asked by the individual working there as to whether she wanted to be an organ donor, and she looked at us and said, I want to do that. And so she gave it a yes, and thank goodness for that.
And she saved up to 5 lives.
She did.
With that decision.
Very much so, yeah.
And Dr. Keaveney, that's Katie's life and her story is an example of why organ donation is so important.
Absolutely. The demand is enormous for patients. As you mentioned, over 120,000 patients are on the list, about 80,000 people actively on the list. And unfortunately, only about 29,000, 30,000 transplants were performed last year. So patients with end organ failure from heart disease, liver, lung disease, kidney disease will die without an organ.
What are the most desperately needed organs?
Well, in truth, if you have organ failure from heart, from lung, from liver, if you are the patient, you're desperate. Those three. There was a great analysis performed by a group from Los Angeles, just published this year, and they calculated that over 2 million life years have been saved over the past 25 years from organ transplantation in general. So these are patients who survived because of organ donors. So I think as a practicing physician, every person who comes in looking for a liver transplant, they're desperate for that chance to live.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment about your questions around organ and tissue donation at 549-2937. So tell us a little bit about the liver transplant program at Mayo.
Well, we have I'm biased, of course.
We're
consistently ranked in the top 3 or 4 in the country. We have outstanding 1 in 3 survival outcomes. We have innovative ways to try and treat patients both before and after transplantation. And it's primarily a great team. So I think it's an example of how we've been able to work with the community, work with the local hospitals. When organ donors become available, we're successful in utilizing those organs and have saved countless of thousands of lives.
And everyone's seen the dramatic video, David, of a trauma team rushing an organ packed in ice to a patient that's waiting on a list and hoping and praying they get what they need. It's very dramatic.
It is, and every donor can make such a difference, and we're hoping that message goes out every day, every minute, in any way we can. And that's, Melissa, one of the reasons why we decided to focus on an educational program, which we're doing at the high school level for freshmen and sophomores. And with some study over a period of time, we have found that freshmen and sophomores are the ones that absorb that story, that information, better than adults, better than seniors in high school. And so we focused on that, and Amy Reese has headed that program up for us, and she's now presented to over 100,000 freshmen and sophomores.
It's important to get that to them before they get their driver's license.
That's right.
Because that's the decision most people make, isn't it? When you get your license, you can check a box letting people know your intentions.
That's correct. And most often, the individual at the License Bureau is going to ask that question. And we're hoping they'll check the yes.
It's interesting because 90% of Americans say they support organ donation, but only about a third of us know the essential steps they need to take to become a donor. So what are the essential steps?
Well, it really is very, very simple. And you when you get your license, it's an excellent time to do that. If you are a driver now and don't have it, it's very easy to go to a DMV and sign up at that point, Department of Motor Vehicles, and sign up to be an organ donor.
That's all you have to do.
Yes. Or you can go online and sign up to be an organ donor as well.
Where do you go?
Amy, do you want to go ahead?
The site is donatelifeflorida.org.
And so most Americans say they support organ donation in theory, but a lot of Americans are uncomfortable with the idea at the same time. Why do you think that is?
I think there may be conception that their care, if they were critically ill or their loved one was critically ill, would be adversely impacted because they'd signed up for that, and that is absolutely not the case.
All
these decisions are based when a declaration is made that the person is deceased. So there's no potential negative impact for care of any one of us if we sign up to be an organ donor. All religious organizations in this country have all said this is a wonderful thing to do. There's no religious concern about this, about organ donation either as well too. So care isn't affected, and you have a potential to really impact many people, both the recipients of organs and their family members as well too, in a very positive way. So that there should be really no concerns that there's a negative impact for organ donation.
And so, David, with the passing of your daughter, Katie, you have really established an incredible legacy in her name with the Katie Caples Foundation and the Katie Ride for Life. Can you tell us about this year's event?
Well, our event this year is going to be on April the 18th, which is a Saturday. Excuse me. And we're expecting over 1,000 riders to come out and participate. And we'll also have walkers who will be coming out. We have a whole course for them to participate with.
And James is on the north side at 549-2937. Hi, James. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, I'm an organ donor now. I didn't used to be an organ donor. But the reason why I wasn't in the past, because, you know, when you watch these TV shows, medical shows, you know, the guy comes in there and say, hey, this guy's almost dead. You know, let's, as soon as he dies, we got an organ. And, you know, it makes it seem like they are not, you know, giving wait for you to die for them to snatch it out of you. But I was listening, you know, I did a little research, and I know they do all they can. And it's like, as soon as that person passes, I know there's a certain time they got to get that organ out. And but in the past, I thought that, oh, man, you watch a TV show, they can't wait for this guy to die so they can grab his organ out of there, you know. So I am an organ donor now.
All right, James, thanks for the call. So he gets at that misconception people have. That's neat, though, that he told the story that he decided to become a donor.
Yeah, I'm delighted he is, and I just encourage everybody that body snatching is a science fiction.
Let's go to Kimberly in Green Cove Springs. Hey, Kimberly, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question regarding organ donation and what kind of costs are involved to the family of the loved one. Because I had a friend of mine who wanted to donate her body to science after she died from stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer, and they wanted to charge the family a fee for her body. So maybe that is something that may be distracting people or discouraging people from donating their organs.
Interesting. Thanks, Kimberly. David.
Melissa, there is no cost to the family for organ donation, and it is something that comes up quite frequently, and so we want to make sure everyone knows that that is not going to happen.
No cost to the family,
right.
And it's not too late to get involved with one of the most beautiful spring events in town, the Katie Ride. The Katie Ride for Life, it's a premier bicycle touring event, and it caters to cyclists and walkers of all abilities on beautiful Amelia Island. Let's hope for good weather, guys. You couldn't pick a more beautiful setting for this event than Amelia Island.
We agree.
No, and it's wonderful to see the community support for the event, and David's activities over the years have been tremendous for organ donation awareness.
Now, how can people register, David, and be part of this?
Well, they can actually register online. They can call us and sign up to be part of the event, and so it's easy for that to take place. They can go on to our website, the katiecaples.org website, and can sign up right there online, and that's the easiest way to do it. And we then begin to trade information with them, and so it makes all the difference in the world.
So sign up for the Katie Ride for Life, whether you like to bike or walk. You can do either one. This is coming up next Saturday, April 18th, 8 a.m. in beautiful Fernandina Beach, a great Saturday event supporting organ donation on the First Coast. April is National Donate Life Month. Sign up to become an organ donor and do that with your child too when they get their driver's license. Thanks so much, David Caples, founder of the Katie Ride, and Dr. Andrew Keevney, medical director for the liver transplant program at Mayo. Have a great time out there. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa. Melissa.
And Culpepper's up next with a look at the Armada's big night. That's in sports. Stay with us.
First Coast Connect is on the go, broadcasting from Jacksonville's One Spark Festival, showcasing innovative projects in arts, music, science, and technology as creators collaborate, connect, and compete for high-stakes financial support. Join host Melissa Ross at the Mocha Jacksonville Theater to be a part of the studio audience April 7th, 8th, or 9th at 8 p.m. Learn more at wjct.org/events.
The Dinosaur Train is rolling into Orange Park. Thrasher Horn Center and WJCT present Jim Henson's Dinosaur Train Live, Buddy's Big Adventure, on Tuesday, May 12 at 6 p.m. See the beloved stars of the hit PBS series come to life on stage in your hometown for the first time. Join Buddy, Tiny, King, Don, and their family and friends in this fun-filled, interactive musical trip back in time. Tickets are on sale now at 904-276-6815 or thcenter.org.
Travel back in time with Radio Theater, Doo-Wop Revival, The Great American Songbook, and Juke Joint. Throwback Sunday, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJZT. Looking forward to looking back.
Spend some time in The Square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT and the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville invite you to vote for your favorite submissions. Visit wjct.org/thesquare.
When composer Philip Glass first started performing his music, it was so different and new that sometimes audiences would get angry. So angry, they'd throw things.
If they threw apples and oranges, that wasn't so great. If they threw an egg, it isn't so bad, because the eggs would just break. No, that could be...
He's our guest on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. And finally, this hour, it was expected to be a record-setting day for the Armada. Instead, Jacksonville's new pro soccer team broke two records.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now with a look at a big weekend in the sports complex. Hey, Cole.
Hello. It was quite a night on Saturday night for the Armada. We'll start there first with all the activity over the weekend that you mentioned, but you know, one of the big questions was that it could potentially be an opportunity to break the NASL modern day attendance record, and that indeed did happen.
Yay!
16,164, right. Hands out for Jacksonville, breaking the old record of just under 14,600 set in Ottawa last year. And this was the only chance to do that because this game played at Everbank Field. The rest of the matches will be played at Community First Park at the baseball grounds for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So this was the last and only chance here for the Armada to break that record in the regular season. So that record's in. But then there was another record set on the pitch. Just 12 seconds in, Jamal Johnson scores the fastest goal ever in an NASL match. It was also one of the fastest goals ever scored in the recorded history of soccer. We're still researching this, but there's a chance it might be one of the top 10 fastest goals ever scored in organized pro soccer.
How about that?
Just a remarkable start. The fans loved it. And then later in the first half, the Armada scored a pair of goals. Keita and Marcos Flores both scoring in the late stages of the first half for a 3-1 victory over FC Edmonton. Certainly got the attention of folks around the league, and the commissioner of the league was on hand. Bill Peterson was watching what happened. You just couldn't pick a better way to get things started for the Armada, who will now go on the road to play at Fort Lauderdale on Saturday, then a bye week, then another road match at Tampa, then their home next on May the 2nd.
You know, it's so exciting to see this community embracing this new team and getting into this sport, which, as you've pointed out on this show many times, it's huge all over the world. It's been slow to really get a foothold in America, but it looks as though Jacksonville is getting behind the Armada.
Yeah, and I don't know why we're so surprised about this, quite honestly, because if you look back to the T-Men in the old NASL, they would routinely draw 10,000-plus. And there has been a passionate, involved, connected soccer community in Jacksonville for a long time. And I think that because of the proliferation of international matches on TV, English Premier League and others, and of course the, I would call it, moderate success of the U.S. men's national team, but a lot of passion that has come into that, we shouldn't at all be surprised that things have turned out so well. There was a threat of rain, which may have kept the attendance down. There was a chance they might have gotten up to, you know, the 20,000 range. It did rain in the second half. It really came down for about 5 minutes in the match yesterday, but really a great showing, and I think the best is yet to come for the Armada.
And, of course, you're the face of the Armada now on local TV, so it's really exciting to have you share all this with us on our show every week. But lots more to talk about, including the Suns had a big day Saturday as well.
Yeah, another opportunity there just before the Armada match. It was a 2 o'clock start at the baseball grounds. They drew over 10,000 for an exhibition game with their parent club, the Miami Marlins. Suns won 14-8 in the slugfest. And the Suns now start their regular season Thursday at home. They have a 20-game homestand to start the season.
Get out of here.
One of the reasons why the Armada will be on the road until May is because the Suns will be home basically almost all of April. It's a huge start for a homestand. And again, remember, this is the last year. They're calling it Pedro's last dance for Peter Bragan Jr., who's selling the team. And it's his victory lap around the Southern League.
Yeah, they really want to go out with a blaze of glory under the Bragan family's ownership, right?
That's right.
And
then,
and how do you see a new ownership dealing with the Suns?
It's going to be interesting. The new owner also owns another minor league team, so he's got experience owning this. I think there's a chance that we could see some pretty dramatic changes in the brand. One of the things about having the Bragans through the years owning that team is that you knew they were always going to be there, sitting at the top of the stands, watching the game. Senior used to ring the bell for the home runs and so forth. So there was a real family atmosphere. It's tough to do that when you're not always at the game. So I think that will change. I also wouldn't be at all surprised, by the way, if the team name were to change and the logo and the brand itself would change. Yeah, I think, you know, if it's a chance to sell more merchandise and kind of rebrand a team. I don't know that it will happen, but I wouldn't at all be surprised if it did.
Meanwhile, a brand I love, the Sharks, they actually had a loss Friday night, the only loss of the weekend.
Second straight loss to the for the Sharks to start the season. Both games they've lost have been by a single point. They lost by just one at home to the hated Orlando Predators. And they'll be on the road this week and then back home at the arena on Friday, April the 17th.
Now, let's talk about your brackets because, of course, you picked Kentucky like everybody else in the Final Four.
Yes.
And a shocker, Kentucky is out.
Can I fall back on my statement that I made to you earlier in the year that Kentucky would lose one or fewer games this year?
You did say that.
Yeah, so I was right in that regard. So I got that going for me, which is nice. But the Wildcats trying to become the first team ever to go 40-0 and win a national championship. But Wisconsin pulled the upset on Saturday. The last time an undefeated team got to the Final Four, it was UNLV in 1991. But they lost to the eventual national champions, Duke. That was Mike Krzyzewski's first national title. And who will Wisconsin face for the championship? Mike Krzyzewski's Duke Blue Devils.
Of course.
Who easily handled Michigan State in the other semifinal. National championship game tips off tonight in Indianapolis. And I'm picking Duke.
Are you?
I am.
Who would have thought Wisconsin would? I mean, who picked Wisconsin, honestly?
Well, I mean, they were. I mean, listen, it wasn't like this was a huge shock that Wisconsin was there.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a one seed. They were one of the best teams all year long. They've got the potential national player of the year, Frank the Tank Kaminsky. And so it wasn't a shock that they got there. I think that Kentucky had been so good all year. They had won. Whenever they were engaged in a game, they were dominant. They were rarely challenged when they were really there and engaged. But that Wisconsin not only beat them, but came from behind to do so in the final 4 minutes. Just a really remarkable performance by Bo Ryan's team.
Absolutely. And again, as Cole said, that tip-off's tonight in Indianapolis. Last but not least, it's one of the most delicious events in town, and Cole is right in the middle of it. this Saturday's Jacksonville Backyard Barbecue Championship.
Yeah, something I look forward to every year. Saturday at Everbank Field, the event's a fundraiser for the Glenn Cook Memorial Scholarship for Daniel Kids. This is the seventh year of the event. It has helped raise money for Daniel and the scholarship. We've awarded 37 college scholarships worth nearly $80,000 in the past 6 years to formerly homeless kids. It's a great family-friendly event. We'll have nearly 50 teams, and you get to sample barbecue from the teams when you come in. More information and tickets available at danielkids.org. Mm-hmm. We'll have certified barbecue judges as well as some celebrity judges.
Our own Karen Fagans is judging.
I'm trying to drag you over there as well.
You know, I feel terrible because you invited me, and as I just checked my email, I realized the invite went into the promotional / spam filter.
Now I'm worried about where some other things are going in the spam filters.
This is an exciting event. When we came out to judge this thing last year, it was serious. Barbecue people are serious.
Yeah, there's no
doubt. Was a whole procedure. There was a whole protocol. We had to eat things. We had to line the barbecue up a certain way. This is top shelf stuff here.
Well, what we do, this is a little bit different than some of the big organized competitions they have for the Florida Barbecue Association or the Kansas City Barbecue Society, is that we have both certified judges and, again, the celebrity judges, who some of whom have become certified judges. Nikki Kimbleton of Channel 4 became certified. Marco Coleman, the former Jaguar, it became certified, and others. So a lot of people get get bit by the barbecue bug.
Yeah.
Maybe they're biting the barbecue bug themselves. But they wind up doing this, and it's the teams really take it seriously. We've got the most pro teams we've ever had in this tournament and all in this contest. We also have some great backyard teams. There are still opportunities for people to, if they want to test their skill at barbecuing. Registration for teams ends tomorrow.
Oh.
So go to danielkids.org to register your team. There are still some spots available for teams if they want to register and get in there and cook their chicken, pork, and ribs and try to show it off.
Absolutely. It's a delicious event. It's at Everbank Field coming up Saturday. Come on out and meet Cole and all the celebrity judges at the Barbecue Championships. Again, danielkids.org to register or get involved. Always great to see you, Cole. Have fun with that.
Thanks, Melissa.
And of course, also this weekend, One Spark will be happening. We're excited here at First Coast Connect because we're going to be doing some shows all this week from downtown Jacksonville and be right in the thick of One Spark. Our own music director, David Luckin, is here to chat with us about that. And David, you're going to be spinning music in the beautiful downtown Mocha Jacksonville Theater so that the audience can groove along with us and enjoy our live shows.
And see the prep that goes into a live radio show. We'll be spinning from 7 to 8, and then we'll be live with Melissa and Sean and our wonderful guest for One Spark Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right?
That's right. We're going to tape the shows. They'll be what you call live to tape. We're going to tape them at 8 p.m. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights with a live studio audience in the Mocha Theater, and then they will air on the radio Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning. Because we figured out last year, we did our live shows in the morning last year from One Spark, and that was a lot of fun, but that's a really quiet time, not a lot of foot traffic, and so we thought, let's do these shows at night and get the energy of the crowd and everybody that's out there on the streets. Some of them are going to wander in and be part of what we're doing at this festival.
Oh, it's going to be great. And we'll spin music for an hour before Melissa goes live, and then we may even play some of the bumps live.
There you go. And let's talk a little bit about how you put together your set list for stuff like this.
I was up till 2 o'clock this morning, putting all kinds of new music in there. I'm going to play a lot of music we haven't played lately on the radio. And it'll include some standard chill out and some standard jazz, but a lot of new music.
You get music sent to you from all over the world, don't you?
I download at least 10 CDs a day.
Do you really?
Yeah.
And people will send you stuff in the mail
time. Yeah, we get some really good stuff, especially our friends at Chin Chin in Germany who produce the Electro Lounge CD. In fact, let's bring a stack of the Electro Lounge CDs, so if people want to grab one before your show.
Should we do a little giveaway?
We can, absolutely.
I think that's a good... I think we just decided We've that right
some.
Now live on the radio, didn't we?
See, this is how decisions are made, Cole.
Maybe Cole can donate some barbecue to
I
this.
I think so.
Well, come on out Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. to MoCA. That's the Museum of Contemporary Art Jacksonville. It faces right onto Hemming Plaza. So if you're downtown for One Spark, just wander on in to the MoCA Theater and be part of our live studio audience for First Coast Connect on the go at One Spark. We want you to come out and be part of the show and ask questions on the radio to all of the One Spark guests. The shows will air the next morning on 89.9. And of course, David Luckin will be giving away some Electro Lounge CDs and spinning music for the crowd.
And Sean's going to play one of my favorite new songs by Vargo, a group from Switzerland called Goodbye is a New Beginning. So if you've ever ended something, it's okay.
It's Every always, ending starts a new beginning.
Absolutely.
We'll listen to that now. And thanks so much for listening to our show. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back at 9 a.m. tomorrow with First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening and enjoy the music.
Look ahead.